You notice what happened at the end. He added a little extra. You know, there was just a little extended ending. This happens over and over in music, and that has a name. What you heard just then was simply a coda, and we'll refer to this term quite a bit. All it means is at the end of a piece or a movement where the composer adds an extra ending of some sort. Now, sometimes it can be just a couple of chords, you know, boom, boom, to make it sound finished. In this case, he's extended it out a little bit for a few seconds. And in other cases, it can be quite extensive. We'll find one piece we're going to listen to with Beethoven. The coda is almost as long as some of the other main sections of the piece. I mean, so, you know, you never know. but it can appear in any form. It's not related to any specific form, although in some forms it appears more often than others. But that's all it means. Now, one other thing did you notice? If you look at your binary form chart, where at the very top, it's written with the A with the repeat, and then B meaning something contrasting, and then the A in parenthesis there, meaning in the second half, the composer returns to some part of A, if not all of A, at least to something resembling it. In the trio, that happened very definitely and very clearly. You had a very definite return to the first half of the binary form in the second half. You may not have noticed that, and I didn't say anything about that in the first half. And I think the reason was the B section of the first half wasn't really all that different from the A section. It was just a little bit of a variant on it. And so there was no real sense of departing and returning. We talked about that, I think, when we dealt with binary form. Sometimes that happens, is that when the composer gets to the second half, rather than doing something quite different, he will simply present a variant on what happened in the first half. And that's what happened there. And so you don't have that sense of rounding off and bringing back the first part, because you never left the first part in the first place. Does anybody have any question about this particular piece, about ternary form, about minuet and trio, or scherzo and trio, or anything else? Okay, let's move on to another form. If we start with a binary form, there are several things we can do. We just saw one thing we could do is we have a complete binary form, and then we follow it with another binary form. And in this case, we went back to that same binary form. What happens if we keep going? Let's say we have one binary form, we follow it with another, we return to the first one to give us ABA, and then we put another one on there, which we would have to call capital letter C, and then we return to A. If we start doing that, we get what we call a rondo, which is this next form. Now, the rondo can take many different variants, that is, ways of being structured, but they are all characterized by one thing, and that is you have an opening section, main section, which we'll call A, and it's in the classic era. It's usually in binary form. Then you have other things going on, but in every case, what characterizes a rondo is several returns to A. So it could be A, B, A, C, A. It could literally, technically, but it very seldom happens, just be A, B, A, B, A. That doesn't happen very often. But you could have something even more extensive. A, B, A, C, A, B, A. Or you could go on to D or something like that. It's usually something like one of these two. The one on top here is the most common. And if the composer simply stopped right there after that second A, you wouldn't hear it as a rondo, but you would say that's just ternary form. So the only difference is really he just keeps going with different things. And in the case of a rondo, one important thing to remember, and the reason this will be important is because when we talk about another form a little bit later, it's important to remember this, and that is these B sections are usually something different. It's not like he's taking the A section and developing it or something like that, but he's presenting different material. And so you hear the contrast, just like you do with the trio as opposed to the minuet. You hear the contrast. And I think the best way to do this, since we've pretty much gone through most of the basics as far as this form is concerned, is for me to play an example. This is a trio, a piano trio of Haydn. And of course, now you know what you're going to hear, at least as far as the instrumentation is concerned. And it's sometimes known as the, it has a number. It's just like I was telling you about Hoboken numbers. Yeah, it has a long Hoboken number, but I'm not going to give you that. It's piano trio in G, and it's sometimes known as the Hungarian trio. Because what you're going to hear is the last movement, which uses a theme which Haydn refers to as a la Hongroise, that is, in the style of a Hungarian, or in his case, at the time in the late 18th century, there was a sort of Hungarian folk music, or really what really was is gypsy music, not true Hungarian Magyar music. But nevertheless, he was trying to imitate that style in it, so it has that particular quality to it. This is A. Second half of the binary that picks up A. Now that's repeated. Now notice something different. Could you follow that? I think it you know, falls pretty clearly. And I was noticing as you, it looked like everyone, just about everyone, just from what I could tell, there was this recognition as these things came back. And that's what listening in terms of musical form is all about, is you hear something and then later on you hear it again and you say, aha, I've heard that before. Now, I don't expect everyone to sit in a concert with a pencil and piece of paper, lettering the whole thing out. I mean, that's that sort of, I don't know, but but if you, but it, this whole business of listening, as far as structure is concerned, as you become familiar with different patterns, you begin to anticipate. In fact, my guess was, by the time you got into C, you were sort of ready and waiting for A. Of course, you knew it was going to come because I told you. But in spite of that, you know, just the way the thing was falling, you began to anticipate and expect that to happen. That's what listening is all about. It's not a, it's not just a formulaic thing. And at times, Haydn is pretty straightforward with this, but at times composers can do things. They can play around with that expectation, and we'll get into some examples later on where they do. But that's what it's all about, and that's what really entering into the, you know, getting involved in the piece is has to do with. And there's a lot of different kinds of expectations. That's just one. Anticipating a certain tune will come back again. We've already talked about expectations in terms of harmony and structure, you know, where we had different phrases, and in terms of meter and things like that. We'll get to a lot more. Now, let's see what happens as another way of expanding our binary form. Notice what we're doing is taking binary and blowing it up in different ways to make an entire movement. A third way would be to simply keep repeating the same thing, that same binary form over and over again, but do something a little bit different each time. And if you do that, then that's a very common form, which we call theme and variation. And that's essentially what theme and variation is you set up, you get a tune, and in the classic era, most of the tunes are binary, and then you keep playing them and doing different things each time. Theme and variation is one of the most common structures in music, not just in Western art music, but in any kind of music. Certainly in the 20th century, if you look at jazz, at least classic jazz, some contemporary jazz has gone on to do other things, but you sort of classic jazz, that's essentially what it is, in a sense, because, you know, you, where the jazz group, whatever it might be, takes a tune, usually plays what they call a chorus, plays it fairly straight, and then different performers improvise, different soloists, you know, take solos, improvise. All that is doing the same thing, keeping the same basic tune and repeating it and changing it. What I'd like to do, I'm going to play a slightly different example from the one I originally intended. I think this is a better example, but I may go back to the other one for a different reason. This is a symphony of Haydn's. In this case, this is a slow movement of the symphony. So far, we've dealt mostly with fast movements. In slow movements, you can have just about any form. But, okay. This is called the Surprise Symphony. If you don't. Okay, we're in the second half of the binary. And then he brings back something similar to the first half. Now he repeats that. The B part. Now, this structure will be maintained. Here's variation one. It simply adds a violin line above it. Repeat of A. He doesn't always repeat both halves in this. That's the only change. Second half of binary. And the return to A. And that's repeated. Variation 2. This sounds different. Do you know what the difference is? He's gone from major to minor. That's A. That's repeated. Now the second half. You don't get an exact repeat there, but he goes on. Not yet. There's variation 3. By now, you should be able to recognize the tune. He repeats A on the he changes it on the repetition here. Now the second half. Second half is repeated. Variation 4. This is a repeat of A, which is changed again on the repeat. B, second half. Any problems following that? It's really very straightforward as far as this binary form is concerned. The only thing that changes is that sometimes he'll repeat one, sometimes he won't repeat each half, and then sometimes when he does the repeat and within the variations, he'll change it on the repeat a little bit more. But otherwise, he maintains it. Haydn did that in a very calculated way, by the way. He was invited to London late in life to sort of preside at some concerts and have some new symphonies and new quartets played. And he was offered a lot of money for doing this. Now, up to this time, he had been a court composer, that is, had been in the employment of Prince Esterhazy, and he was essentially a servant. He wore a servant's uniform and all of that. But this was an opportunity, one of the first opportunities for a major composer like this to break free of the patronage system. And so he got there, and he was sort of the hit of London. He was quite well known. But there was one other composer who was also presenting some concerts there. And Haydn was no dummy when it comes to PR. He wanted to make sure that he did things in his concerts that the people would talk about. And so in most of these late symphonies, you find certain unusual things happening. And this is what happened in this one, is that particular, you know, big fortissimo chord, which was actually on an offbeat. It was not on the downbeat, not when you would expect it. And he did other things in some of the other symphonies like that. So that's the reason it's called that.